96.3 FM.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait, do you want me to say hello?
I'll have to do another one.
Yeah, maybe one last one.
Radio CKUT 90.3 FM.
Are you recording? You are? Oh. Can you press stop?
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Food has long been one of humanity's greatest concerns. Since the origins of our species, we have subsisted off of what we could, gradually domesticating plants and animals, changing from nomads to farmers. Throughout history, there has been one major constant: the idea of a homestead, a self-sufficient family unit capable of providing their own food. Over the course of hundreds of years, through wars, famines, revolutions, and the advancement of technology, homesteads have survived. Until now. With the Industrial Revolution came global trade, bringing food, materials, and new business practices. The small family farms that had once been so essential to civilization were now obsolete. In their place rose large plantations, each producing only a single crop for the market. As times went on, homesteads were forced to close because they were being outcompeted by big businesses. In the modern era, these family farms are all but extinct. However, the appearance of COVID-19 and the looming threat of climate change have put a question mark on our future food supply and sparked a renewed interest in the idea of the peasant farmer, or paysan. This has manifested itself in the form of permaculture. Good morning, everyone. I'm Annunzio Toretti, and you are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, McGill University Radio. I'm here today with the owners of Toretti Homestead, a small family farm in the Outaouais region of Quebec. Would you like to introduce yourselves and give us a bit of an idea about your background?
My name is Luigi Toretti. I have a master's in ecology, and I've become interested in permaculture about 8 to 10 years ago now, and that's something that we've tried to establish here on our homestead.
My name is Becky Toretti, and like Luigi, I also have a master's degree in ecology. I also received my permaculture design certificate this year, but we've been using permaculture to design our and create our homestead since 2016 when we arrived here.
All right, so since you've both mentioned it, would you mind explaining to us what permaculture is?
So permaculture is a design system for ecological living. The term permaculture can be thought of as permanent agriculture or permanent culture, and it was a term that was coined and popularized in the 1970s by two Australian ecologists, Bill Mollison and David Holmgren. Permaculture is based on a set of tools and techniques that were innovated in part by indigenous cultures around the world. And the goal of permaculture is to create living, evolving systems that mimic nature, produce food and energy, and regenerate rather than destroy the earth.
Unfortunately, quite a few people think that permaculture is gardening. And it is not gardening. It's a very complex topic, and there are many, many books about permaculture. It is not simply a system for gardening. It is a system for multiple life and ecological approaches.
So what made you decide to, you know, come here and start a permaculture homestead?
When we were living in Nunavut, we lived in Nunavut for 10 years prior to moving here. And it was a fly-in only community, and the choices for food were very, very limited. So we had a young family, and Becky began to do a lot of research on food and what exactly we're eating and what are the elements and components that are in the purchased products that we had. Being a fly-in community, our food selection was very, very limited. Very, very little fresh produce, lots of packaged foods. And so Becky had that desire to learn a little bit more about what it was that we were eating, and especially with a young family and our kids. So that's where we learned about glyphosate. That's where we learned about all the pesticide residues that are in a lot of the processed foods. And that's where we began to understand that the food system and the industrial food system, I should say, was working to its benefit, not necessarily to the benefit of people. And so we wanted to have a lot more control over that food system. And a homestead is one way that, or a small farm is one way to exert some of that control and to regain that control and produce it ourselves rather than purchasing processed foods.
As ecologists, we also saw how the world was changing, and living in the Arctic, we had a front row seat to those changes. We wanted to make sure that we got to a place where we could not only raise our own food, but also be able to teach our kids how to raise their own food in a future that we really don't know what will happen with food systems. We also saw the benefit of living in an Indigenous community and in the Inuit community we lived in, and how working together as a community enabled us to be stronger, that we were stronger together because we worked in partnership. And so we knew that self-reliance was important, but that doing it all on our own was not our goal, that we would be stronger with our community, with a group of people. And so permaculture just seemed like a really a logical way to go as we left the North. We also wanted to be able to teach our children our own food cultures from our own ancestors. Here we had been living in the North for 10 years and learning the food systems up there, but we also have aging parents, and we wanted to be able to get back to the land that is more familiar to our ancestors, so we could learn those cultures and traditions that we could pass on to our kids.
Okay, so what is it exactly you're doing here on the permaculture homestead then? What are you growing, and what are your plans for the future?
So we raise a lot of our fruits and vegetables and meats on our homestead. 100% of our meat is raised here on our homestead and comes from Muscovy ducks, chickens, and pigs. We have annual vegetable gardens, a caterpillar tunnel where we raise tomatoes. We have a children's garden that we've started. We've also established a lot of perennial gardens, perennial vegetables like rhubarb and asparagus, and fruits that blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, apple trees, pear trees, plums, and apricots. We've also started reclaiming some of the pasture areas that had been planted with monocultures of red pine and spruce, so we can pasture our animals there instead of having those monocultures that were really not productive and had really no diversity as far as vegetation. We've also added several structures on our homestead that allow us to grow, process, and save our food. In the future, we've already began establishing a food forest, and so we'll continue filling that out. We've already planted several fruit trees and shrubs in there, but we'll continue with the ground cover layers, and so hopefully that will provide a lot of food for us decades into the future. We also have plans to add another greenhouse to help extend the seasons. We have a really short growing season here, so any season extension we can do is really important. We also hope to add some dairy animals, either sheep or a small cow, in the future.
Okay, so now that we've covered, you know, some of the stuff you're doing here on the homestead, how does this all fit into the permaculture philosophy?
So before we get into specifics, it's good to understand that permaculture is based on three ethics. The first ethic is care for the earth. Second is care for people. And the third ethic is fair share, taking only your fair share, or parity. And these ethics guide the use of several different design principles.
For example, one of the design principles is to obtain a yield. And obviously, we have a garden. We have lots and lots of vegetables in that garden, you know, tomatoes, carrots, kohlrabi, cabbage, you name it, we probably have it. So obviously we're planting these in order to obtain a yield to feed our family and friends. Also, we have animals on the homestead, and that also provides us with a yield. We have our own chickens and ducks that reproduce on the farm, so that is another means of obtaining a yield. A follow-up principle to that is catching and storing energy. So obviously with the garden vegetables, we have to undertake a few things in order to be able to store that energy. One component that we have that helps us with that is the root cellar, where we store our potatoes and other root crops. We also engage in a lot of canning. We do our butchering for the animals. And we have several freezers in order to be able to store those meats. And one important component of catching and storing energy is water. We live in Quebec and there's an abundance of water everywhere, but our site is actually very, very dry. And so we have put components together that address the aridness of our site. We have lots of gutters that capture rainwater. We have 8 1,000-liter totes that allow us to direct water to the different areas of the garden that we need to water. We also did some earthworks. We incorporated 3 swales on a slope on our property in order to allow the rainwater to soak in and be absorbed into our land rather than just run off. And finally, another example of catching and storing energy is our passive solar greenhouse. We actually have 2, but the component, the passive solar greenhouse, allows us to maximize the solar radiation captured to allow the plants to thrive in that additional heat. And as a third example of a permaculture principle, produce no waste. And what we've always looked at the homestead as essentially a closed loop. Inputs essentially match outputs, or whatever output you produce is used as an input for some other area of the homestead. We've always had that kind of a vision for ecological vision for the homestead. As a couple of examples, what we do is we use rotational grazing, and we have chicken tractors, and we displace the chickens twice a day, and so that the droppings are incorporated right onto the land and fertilize our land, so that output is actually integrated right away into our land. But another way that we do that is by using all of the soiled bedding in our hen house we use as a component in our composting systems. So again, the output of one area of the homestead acts as an input in another area of the homestead.
So there are some people who would argue that we have advanced technologically past, you know, needing this idea of a homestead. There are people who would say that we can do things cheaper, more efficiently with, you know, the industrial monocrop agriculture that we practice today. What do you have to say to those people?
Conventional agriculture is based on the idea that Earth's resources are infinite, that we have an endless supply, but that isn't the case. Conventional farming is extractive, it harms the environment, it exploits people. For example, it depends on cheap labor. And it harms other inhabitants of the planet. It's geared around making a profit, not feeding people. Permaculture, on the other hand, is regenerative. It seeks to strike balance between the needs of the people who depend on the system, but also the ecosystem of the farm and the ecosystem of the planet.
As I mentioned before, what we seek to do on our homestead is to essentially try to close the loop. We try to match the inputs that come into our system and the outputs that come out of our system, or the different components of our system, the chickens and so on and so forth. With industrial agriculture, they depend on a lot of input, especially monocropping. They have to buy that seed. They need huge machinery in order to work very, very fertile lands in order to plant and harvest their products. And in the interim, there's a need for fertilizers, typically chemical, and insecticides, herbicides or fungicides that are used to keep that monoculture healthy. That is a tremendous amount of input into that system, whereas into a permaculture-based homestead, that is... it's completely different. Like we're looking at diversity. We're looking at a diversity of crops, a diversity of animals. So it's a very different system. It is small scale. And some people may say that industrial food systems feed a larger proportion of the world. But if that small scale is multiplied, I think it can produce just as much and a diversity of foods compared to an industrial system. And many people are starting to speak about the ecological effects of industrial agriculture. And unfortunately, the system is still based on large tracts of land, large systems, rather than looking at the beneficial ecological effects of a small scale.
Okay. How about challenges? What kind of problems have you encountered so far?
Growing food in a changing environment is really difficult. We're located at the foothills of the Laurentian Mountains, so we're also on the boundary between two ecosystems, two growing zones, so there's already a lot of variability in our environmental conditions. But adding climate change on top of it just amplifies that variability. For example, in the last 5 years, we've had two flood events that are supposed to occur over every 100 years, but yet we've had two of them in the last 5 years. We've also had two spring droughts and one summer drought. But with the permaculture components and systems we have put in place on our homestead, we are seeing our resiliency increase over time, where we are actually able to produce a good amount of food despite the variability in environmental conditions.
And what about the system? Is the system preventing you from doing some things that you might otherwise have been able to?
So just as a clarification, when you talk about systems, are you referring to regulations or legislative issues in Canada and Quebec?
Yeah, so the laws that can govern what you do as a homestead or a small farm.
That is a very good question, and a challenging one for anyone who wants to get into a small farm type business. When it applies to a homestead, so where I'm referring to a homestead is if you are producing the food specifically for your own consumption, for your own family, for the people that reside at your address, then the world is your oyster. You can do a number of things without really being concerned with the legislation here in Quebec. For example, if you have a family milk cow, you can drink the raw milk without an issue. If you turn around and wish to sell that raw milk, well, then you run into some federal legislations that prevent you from earning any kind of income from that raw milk. There are also, in Quebec, there are quota stipulations for milk and selling milk as well. And that opens up a huge can of worms for a small individual. The capital investment required there is incredible. You cannot do that at a small scale. So yes, there are quite a few legislative challenges that if you wish to turn your homestead into a revenue-producing farm, there are a lot of regulations that you have to be aware of and that can limit your ability to do so. When I was learning about permaculture and reading up all the books that I could 8-10 years ago, most of the literature that I had access to originated from the United States. And the legislation in the United States is obviously very, very different from legislation here in Canada. Another example there is many little homesteads in the United States are permitted to slaughter their chickens on farm and sell them directly to their clients. And those at volumes that are mind-boggling compared to what we are limited to here in Quebec. In Quebec, we are limited, if you are outside of the quota system, you are limited to 300 meat chickens per growth period. So on your homestead, you are only allowed 300 meat chickens that you can grow at one period of time. And in the States, it's much, much higher than that. And the on-farm slaughter is, if you slaughter on-farm, you are permitted to consume that meat at your homestead, at your address, but you are certainly not permitted to sell that meat to anybody, including sharing it. For example, the policy, the specific policy governing slaughtering in Quebec indicates that meat that is slaughtered at a particular address has to be consumed at that address. So technically, I would not even be able to share my meat, my chicken, my duck with my parents who live in Montreal. So the regulatory environment in Quebec is quite challenging. And as a homestead, we worked with the MAPAC, the Ministère de l'Agriculture, Pêche et Aliments du Québec, last year in October, as part of a pilot project to investigate how hygienic it is to slaughter on farm. And it was quite effective to demonstrate to them that you can slaughter on farm with minimal equipment and still have a hygienic product. So hopefully we're looking forward to 2022 because there is the possibility of the Minister of MAPAC permitting the sale, the on-farm sale of chicken that is slaughtered on-farm. So I'm really excited about that potential development.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. And good luck with your future endeavors.
Thank you very much for your interest and for your questions.
Yeah, thank you for coming to Toretti Homestead.
That was Luigi and Rebecca Toretti of Toretti Homestead. You can find them on their Facebook page, also named Toretti Homestead. This segment was produced for John Abbott on the Air, CKUT 90.3 FM. Once again, I'm Annunzio Toretti, and I hope you have a great day.
My name is Jewel Harrison, and today I'll be reporting for John Abbott on the Air, CKUT 90.3 FM. Today I'll be reviewing the podcast Views with David Dobrik and Jason Nash. Views, hosted by the one and only David Dobrik, along with his best friend Jason Nash, explores their relationship, their thoughts, and behind the scenes of David's famous vlogs and what it's really like being a successful YouTuber. Views with David Dobrik and Jason Nash really focuses on their day-to-day life and all the humorous events that take place along the way. It features special guests almost every week. Views definitely never fails to give me a good laugh and uplift my mood. If you've ever seen any of David Dobrik's infamous 4-minute, 21-second vlogs, then you know he only shows small pieces of his days. But what is interesting about his podcast is that you gain so much insight on what actually goes on behind the scenes. David Dobrik is widely known for being a jokester, but he is also known for giving. All jokes aside, in his podcast, he truly demonstrates his generosity and not only how it affects others, but himself as well. After listening to views with David Dobrik and Jason Nash, I think it is quite obvious that one benefit we can all agree on is happiness. This is a comical podcast which truly brings you laughter and overall enjoyment. This podcast is designed for a large audience of all age groups, but I believe teens and young adults would appreciate the content more than others since it can be a little immature at times. You can find Views with David Dobrik and Jason Nash on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio.com, and now YouTube with new episodes every Monday. My name's Jewel Harrison. Thank you for listening.
Hello, listeners. My name is Evan Policino, and today I'm going to talk to you about a very special podcast out there that, despite a few years having gone by since its release, will always have a dear place in my heart. It's a podcast that helped pioneer a new way of telling stories. The Adventure Zone, by Justin, Travis, Griffin, and Clint McElroy, is a Dungeons & Dragons podcast made by three brothers and their dad. In the first 70 episodes of the show, they tell an amazing and fantastical story, all while joking around, playing a game with nothing but dice, paper, and their imagination. Do not be fooled into thinking this is merely a tabletop gaming podcast for fantasy nerds, because what starts out as a fun family podcast quickly turns into a rich, character-driven story that'll make you care about what is happening behind their voices. Not to mention an originally composed soundtrack that backs up key moments in the show. Unlike most podcasts, which usually feature people talking about various topics, often either related to news, comedy, or both, this series is much more like a TV show for all ages that happens to be in audio form. The level of immersion, however, is on the same level as television, and the last few episodes will leave you in tears of both sorrow and joy. I know I was. Despite containing everything from magic, gods and monsters, artifacts, love and death, and the occasional hot tub conversation, absolutely no knowledge or interest in Dungeons & Dragons is required. A taste for fantasy, like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter, helps with the enjoyment of the story, but it's not at all necessary. I would simply recommend The Adventure Zone to anyone who loves epic stories with great laughs. You can find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcast. Now here's a taste of their music.
Trying to decide which Sejep to go to after graduation, we're going to tell you about a very special place. You'll have no problem deciding after you hear about this Sejep. It's all here at John Abbott College, a very special Sejep.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvist. See you next time.
are data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org.
Fêter, 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 f